In 1997, playwright Han Ong became one of the youngest recipients of a MacArthur Genius Grant. The Fellowship Award gives artists, scientists, activists, and entrepreneurs financial backing to pursue work in their field. Ong used his money to try his hand at writing novels. Ong's second novel has just been published. It's called The Disinherited, and it begins in July 2000. The story's protagonist, Roger Caracera, is a middle-aged writing professor at Columbia University. He's reluctantly returned to his family estate in the Philippines for the funeral of his father, Jesus. Jesus had been the corrupt head of the family's sugar business, an enterprise that once held tremendous influence in the Philippines before the sugar industry crashed. One scorching afternoon, the Caracera clan gathers at the law offices of Santos and Santos for the reading of Jesus' last will and testament.
To my youngest son, Santos Sr. read, with the expert prolonging of the performer he became in such situations. To my youngest son, he repeated, Roger Caracera, who, it must be admitted, has shown little proof of deserving my love, and even less proof of being equipped to deal with the business of life, and it should be understood that the following bequest is being given in the spirit of wanting to help him repair this fundamental inadequacy, and not, as my two older children might be misled to believe, favoritism. To Roger Caracera, I, the undersigned, being of sound mind and judgment, leave $500,000, again, to spend or invest or distribute in any way he may see fit. A loud groan filled the room. Santos Sr. looked up to see the man who'd inherited $500,000 appearing as if he'd been stabbed, his body pushed back. Another animal sound escaped from the man's mouth, and he bowed his head like he was going to vomit.
Han Ong, reading from his new novel, The Disinherited, and he joins us from our New York bureau. Oh, welcome. Thank you very much for that reading.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the excerpt you just read. You know, when a powerful relative dies, the black sheep of the family can usually be expected to be left out of the will. But Roger manages to inherit $500,000, and he's not happy about this. First of all, why does he react to it as though he's going to vomit?
Roger has made a life based on the assumption that being as far apart from his family is sort of the ideal state to be. He has grown up with great unease about the source of the family wealth, which is not only the sugar production, but a close kinship with the Marcos government and the cronies in that government. So when he receives $500,000, in his mind, he's being hooked back into a family that he has spent a lifetime running away from.
Why does he decide to give the money away?
In his mind, the ideal version of events would turn out that he would refuse it, but in the shock of the moment, he forgets that, and all along the journey of his days in Manila, when he could easily have refused it, he doesn't. And then once he has the money, he, I think, sees it as a chance to sort of redress the wrongs of the previous generation, of his father's generation and his uncle's generation. And as he begins to dig deeper into the family history, he discovers secrets, certain buried events that he thinks would be right to unearth in honor of the ideal version of himself that would have refused the money and should have refused the money.
Are his motives purely altruistic in order to give the money to the workers that, you know, had to toil under awful conditions in the sugar fields? Or is he trying to stick it to his family by giving money away that it appears from the way that you've created the characters in the family, they would do anything to keep?
There is a passage in the book when Roger comes to the realization that his family's made nervous by his plans for the money. He at first doesn't know what he's going to do with the money, and yet the family surrounds him with these questions, constantly digging away at his motives. And I think once he becomes aware of the unease he causes in the family, I think that helps fuel him. So it's not just a philanthropist's motivation that he has. It's also a revenge back on his family.
So why can't he give the money away? I mean, he's got intentions, both good and not so good, and he can't get rid of it.
He can't get rid of it because Let me backtrack a little bit. The inspiration for this novel occurred when I attended a MacArthur Foundation get-together in 1998. I don't quite remember who it was, but it might have been one of the board members had gone up to address the gathering, and he had said something to the effect that people don't know how difficult it is to give away money well. Now, I thought that was such a great idea, to give away money well. I mean, there's so many quarters of need in the world, you'd think the only thing to do would be to identify them and then give them the money. But he broke it down in such a way that it became almost scientific. You know, how much to give, how much is too much, how to screen candidates and all of that. And so when Roger decides to give the money away, that's only part one of a several-part process. And so he has to identify the quarters of need. And once he does, he has to weigh one against the other, which one is more deserving, and what might possibly disqualify them. In the opening of the book, he talks about being an enemy of Catholicism. So he has to come to some kind of compromise, because nobody that he can approach to give his money to would be untouched by the precepts of Catholicism. So he has to keep compromising.
Mm. Roger's famous in the country. There are the parallels that are drawn between General Douglas MacArthur and, you know, the prodigal son returning
right
to the land of his birth with perhaps misplaced largesse.
Roger becomes a tabloid celebrity because he is the most photogenic child of a very well-known family, a family that has since come down in the world, but still, you know, has a very glamorous aura around it. And once the fact of his being $500,000 richer, which the tabloids misinterpret as $1 million, once that gets out, they have cause to sort of keep him in the papers. And also that compounds the difficulty of his task, because then so many other people hearing of this $1 million come in like vultures.
In terms of success, however, and the perceptions, I mean, the perceptions of Roger's family is that he's a bum. And he has a job, and he's teaching,
right,
and he's
but
made
it's
success.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a perception he is more than happy to perpetuate.
Were you someone whom your family considered not to be successful? I mean, you know, high school dropout, and then you get the MacArthur Fellow and you publish your first novel and you've got your second one out now. Are you considered successful by your family now?
Yes, with qualifications, you know, a qualified success. I don't know if you've heard this from other Asian interviewees before, but I think in the culture, writing is not viewed as high on the list of professions for your children because it's just so uncertain. You know, also there's that link to a bohemian sort of freewheeling lifestyle that is particularly frowned upon by the elders, you know. So I have to also point out that what it is that I write about would further downgrade that impression of success that I have, because I write what would be considered by right-thinking, polite society as disreputable characters, or characters who are complex. They have various motivations, some of which aren't exactly gold star motivations.
This new book, I mean, you there are a lot of discussions and arguments that Roger has talking about issues in the Philippines, prostitution, criticizing the dependence that the Filipinos seem to place on Catholicism and wealth, the post-colonial relationship with the United States. You even have a movie being made there, and Harvey Keitel is playing Douglas MacArthur. These are really cultural criticisms. So
yes,
we're not talking about personal, we're not talking about characters. So you didn't even talk to your parents or members of your family or your larger community about the fact that here you are, spending most of your time in the United States, casting your eye on the Philippines.
Yeah, what right do I have to
sort of
look back with this jaundiced eye? I came here when I was 16. That was 20 years ago. In the intervening 20 years, I have not gone back to the Philippines. I knew that my memories of the Philippines were antiquated, and I needed the current Philippines to sort of be alive in my head. And to that purpose, I sort of get together with a lot of Filipino friends, and we keep alive the Philippines amongst ourselves. And we talk, and we discuss the Philippines, we discuss our own childhoods there. And a lot of these friends are artists, and they have gone back, whereas I haven't. And so they helped me to keep to this true version of the Philippines. And we do talk about these things, the same things I talk about in my book, although not to this kind of laser-like specificity. I don't know. I think this jaundiced eye is cast with love. If you want something to get better, I think if you feel frustrated, that frustration comes out of a kind of love.
Han Ong, his novel is called The Disinherited. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and he joined us from our New York bureau. Thank you very much. Good luck with this.
Thanks a lot.
There's an extended version of the conversation with Han Ong at our website, npr.org. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Ned Wharton, with production help from David Rector, Elaine Heinzman, Lauren Spohr, Jesse Baker, and Joel Riddle. Stu Seidel is the senior editor. The senior producer is Robert Maleski. Our technical director is Burke Hun, with audio engineers Ted Mebane. Key Maleski is our reference librarian. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman, with additional music from Steph Scajari and Greg Smith. I'm Leanne Hansen. Thank you.